Welcome to the Money Tree Investing Podcast. Stock market, wealth, personal finance, value stocks. Invest in your life.
Hey, welcome back, everybody. Happy New Year to you all. I am Joe Salcihi from the Stacking Benjamins Podcast, and I will be leading the show today, and we'll introduce our guest in just a moment. But have you ever wondered if there were a way to capitalize on all that online chatter, the millions of investors on social media? Well, guess what? Your wait's over, because the same artificial intelligence techniques used by some of the world's most sophisticated hedge funds, that's now at your fingertips, and you can make their edge your edge. The Buzz Index, licensed to an exchange-traded fund, trades under ticker symbol BUZ, provides investors with a portfolio of securities that show the highest degree of positive investor sentiment online. No surveys, no guessing. Here's what they do instead. First, Buzz targets the most mentioned large cap US stocks among the social media landscape. And the more active the conversation, the greater the reliability of the buzz. Each of the most mentioned stocks is then given an insight score based on Buzz's proprietary analytics. And the 75 stocks that are the most bullish scores, those get included in the index each month. Invest in the wisdom of the crowd. Head to moneytreepodcast.com/BUZZ for a link to the Buzz Index and more information. That's moneytreepodcast.com/BUZZ. Now let's get on with the show. And Chris Carosa joins us on the show. Welcome, man.
Hi, Joe. How you doing?
Well, I'm better now that you're here, because we're going to talk. I think what we're really talking about today is compounding interest. But you've got this thing that sounds crazy, which is that if somebody's getting ready to have a child right now, they could be a millionaire in retirement and not save a dime after they turn 18 years old.
That is correct.
Everybody listening, Chris, is going, how is that? Does that mean they put a bunch of pennies in the piggy bank and take it down to the casino in Las Vegas?
No. It's really pretty simple. It's just they save a little money in an IRA. I called it a child IRA. And it's a combination of the compounding power of a 401k with the flexible contribution abilities of a 529. Now, there are some restrictions on how you can do it right now, but you can certainly ask people to change the policies so that it would broaden the ability for more people to take advantage of it.
Boy, you're thinking, we're talking about $80 a month, not a bunch of money, really.
No, $80 a month, $20 a week, a little bit more than $3 a day. So it's not really that much.
Let's talk about this, because there is no such thing as a child IRA right now, correct?
It is not called specifically a child IRA. However, I've been talking to a number of people who have been utilizing regular IRAs for their children, and they're on their way to achieving this goal.
Awesome. And I'd like to talk about that in a second. But do you look at the same thing with maybe a Roth, or the rules the same, whether it's a Roth or a traditional IRA?
In fact, many people prefer to use the Roth because it's tax-free over time. The rules are still the same as far as how you can contribute, but it's the end result where you get a little bit of a different action.
Are you just using, when you talk about compounding interest with a child IRA, do you use just the regular historical S&P 500 or an 8% return? What type of compounding are we talking about?
I do use an 8% return. It's based on the historical average of 11% a year. Over a 50 or 70 year period, it's fairly common to get roughly 11%. So I've taken 3 percentage points off of it to be very conservative, and that still gets you $2.25 million.
And if you've got somebody that you're working with, because you are a certified trust and financial advisor and the president of Carosa Stanton Asset Management, like we said earlier, if you're working with somebody and you're implementing this, where does this idea fit before we get into it on the big scheme of things that somebody should do with their financial plan?
Yeah, I think that if you fit the target demographic, say, then you'll want to talk to your financial planner or your advisor about how you might be able to do this with your own children. Now, again, because there are restrictions, the child needs to have income. Not a lot of people have the ability to set up these accounts as is. That's where I was referring to that policy change earlier on that would enable more people to take advantage of this like they do with a 529 plan.
I don't see any downside, because the government, obviously, when the government had the MyRA, I don't want to have a political discussion here, Chris, but when they created the MyRA, it was try to get people to start saving and maybe start saving earlier. It seems that with parents that are interested in their child savings, like, this should be a layup.
It should be. I mean, the question is very simple. Would you be willing to spend $1,000 a year for 19 years to ensure that your child retires a multimillionaire? It's as simple as that.
When it comes to this type of thing, though, I'm assuming that you tell people, say, for your own retirement first before trying this out.
Well, of course, you want to do that. But I think that what we're really addressing here is the concern many young parents have about their own children and whether or not Social Security, for example, will be around when their children are ready to retire. This is a way to wean the children away from a dependency on Social Security and be more self-secure, self-sufficient in their own retirement.
Now, let's talk about how a child IRA works exactly then. What's the mechanism that people use to get this type of thing started, Chris?
Well, right now, the child has to have income.
Okay.
So if you think about it, there are very few employment opportunities for newborn babies.
Right.
However, I've interviewed a number of modeling agents, talent agents, who told me about what children this age can expect to get, how they can expect to get jobs, and whether or not they can achieve the amount that they need to hit that $1,000 level. And it is possible. Once you get beyond those very, very young years, say maybe when you're about 5 years old or so, then you're a little bit more active. It's easier to become part of, say, an earning situation. Again, it's low level. I mean, it could just be something as raking the leaves in the neighbor's lawn or cutting the grass, something like that. Well, maybe not at 5 years old. Raking the leaves, maybe. But you can do something. Still, the modeling is the key thing up until the age where you really can start doing these other jobs. By the time you're a teenager, that's when you get regular jobs. That's when you could actually get paying jobs, depending on what state you're in, on what age you're allowed to work at. That's for seeking income outside the domain of the family. However, there are certain individuals, in fact, there's millions of individuals, who have home-based or family-owned businesses. It's a lot easier to become a child model, say, if your parents own a company and they want to have an ad in the local newspaper that features a baby saying, our product is great because it helps the future. And that's what a little baby could show. So there's ways that you can do it, a lot more ways that you can provide income to your child if you have a home-based or family-owned business.
Now, we got to be clear here because I know that there's people that have tried to set this type of thing up before where they're like, oh, yeah, yeah, Chris, I get it. Yeah, I'll have them work. Nudge, 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 nudge. No, 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 no. They really do have to earn the money.
They have to earn the money. They have to earn a reasonable amount. And yes, it has to go through those crazy W-2 forms and whatever sort of, you know, pay stubs that you generate. So yeah, they have to be treated like real employees. I will say this, though, if they are a model or if they're in the modeling realm, they might be considered an independent contractor. I think that's what you need to talk to a legal professional about to see what the best way is to accept that money, to accept that earnings, so the IRS agrees that those are actual earnings.
So then, if they're an independent contractor, and I don't want to draw this out too far, but, you know, if they show up in diapers, the cost of the diapers are write-offable as a business expense?
Well, you know, that's a good question. That's a CPA question. Right. That's outside of my expertise.
Right, yeah. I'm thinking of all the baby stuff. I start writing off, and then I got an IRS guy at my house asking some questions. Yeah, that's good stuff. What type of success stories have you seen with this type of plan with the child IRA? Because you have to have seen some really cool things that people have done.
Well, you know, it's really interesting. You might say, how'd you come up with this idea? That's really the first question that
right.
I'm asked. And it's a really weird sort of like penicillin type story. I would teach merit badge sessions for Boy Scouts. And there's a merit badge that's required for Eagle Scout, and that involves investing and saving. And I would use this example of what would happen if they started saving $1,000 when they were 15 years old. Well, in one of my earlier books, I was actually using that example. And as I was fact-checking the book, I went back to the spreadsheet, and I accidentally started it at age zero. So, you know, at first I said, oops, good thing I caught it before we published the book. But then I thought, you know, what if you did start at age zero? It's only $1,000 a year. What would it do? And that's when I, you know, did the calculations, and $2.25 million. Holy cow. Talk about, you know, solving the Social Security crisis.
Done.
So so that's how really I kind of fell into this whole idea. Now, I had since done research for some of the articles that I've written about this, and there have been various forms of this that have been proposed over the years, none of any which really took off. However, as I sought to interview people who thought about ways for saving for their children, specifically for their children's retirement, that's when I began to come upon individuals who actually did use IRAs. It was very, very modest, maybe $50 or $100 a year. They weren't thinking of it in terms the way I've described it, which is this $2.25 million at age 70 goal. They were just thinking, oh, yeah, sure, let's teach the kids good savings habits, have them set up their own IRA, or in cases where they didn't use the IRA, maybe traditional brokerage accounts, something like that, just to make the kids more financially savvy. So that's a lot of things that people have been doing now. When I turn it around and I ask them and frame it in terms of this child IRA, a lot of the people who are doing it, they say, holy cow, that's not that much more difficult to do than what I'm doing now. And if I just tweak what I'm doing now, I could really give my kid a leg up on retirement.
That's really cool. And to show people the difference, and I'm sure you've done this math, I should have asked you ahead of time, Chris, before we hit record. But if you do this from 0 to 18, it's one thing. If you start at 18, like some people do, and you know, a lot of people don't start until 25, 30, 35, 40, you start at 18. How many years do you have to save to get the same result? Maybe let's say at 65 or what? I'm sure you've done some of that math. You know what I'm asking?
Yes, I have. And in fact, the way this works, it's pretty simple. From the moment the child is born, $1,000 a year until age 19. Now, that's actually $19,000, even though you stop giving at age 19, because the first year is year zero.
Right.
So that's what gets you $2.25 million. Now, what happens, and a lot of parents are saying, oh, you know, my kid's not zero anymore. The kid's 3, 5, 10, even in college. So I actually did a series of studies based on these different ages and how much you have to give into these IRAs to catch up to the ability to get $2.25 million at age 70.
Yeah.
And the worst case scenario I looked at was, what if you don't start until after you graduate from college? So in that case, you have to put in the maximum amount, which is $5,500, until roughly age 40. And if you do that, then you'll get that same $2.25 million based on the calculations and the assumptions that I use.
Yeah, that's another reason right there, Chris, to get started early.
Yeah, it is. And of course, you know, now we're talking about the adult years and you have a 401k that you can use to save, and you can certainly save more than $5,500 a year if you include the matching. But now that's really a different realm from what my new book is about, the one about the child IRA. I'm really focused on the minor children and how to save for them and how easy it is to make them millionaires.
What do you say to people that say, you know what, Chris, I love this idea. It sounds great. But, you know, I don't want to hand my kid a fortune, right? Even Warren Buffett said, I'm not going to give all my money to my kids. I'm going to give them enough to be, you know, to be stable. And then they can go out and make their way in the world, because there's some truth in that, too. What do you say to them?
Well, that's their choice. I mean, they're fine. They can do that. And I know a lot of people do think in those terms. But I also know a lot of people who really worry about the state of Social Security in 70 years.
Yeah.
We've had a dire warning out earlier this summer about Social Security suffering some sort of fundamentally disruptive change within 20 years. And if people think, and many people really still continue to need Social Security as part of one of the legs for retirement, this is just a way to just loosen that dependency. So really, it's a question of, am I going to make my kids fish and hunt in their own, or am I going to give my kids a good base so then that they could launch from there?
Yeah.
I think that's the philosophical choice that parents have to make.
Good point. Are there any investments you think are better than others for this type of thing, or are you agnostic about the investment options people use?
I am certainly agnostic. I am using just market averages. I'm not endorsing the use of, say, index funds or any particular type of investment. The only thing I say is you'll want to have a long-term investment. You don't have to, you know, swing for the fences, just get the average return. If you can do that, then you can leave your child $1 million or more when they retire.
Awesome. And so how do then people find out more, Chris? Because I know you've got the book, you've got all kinds of writing about the child IRA. How do I find out more?
Well, I would say go to my website, childira.com.
I'm there right now, by the way. People jumping, people concerned.
Yes, yes. That site will contain more information, more updates as I gather more information. During the promotional portion of our book, which is the publication date was September 12th, the idea is to go to more organizations that promote child savings, make them aware of this, and hopefully get them to tell the people that they talk to through public service announcements that, hey, this is something that you really should consider. And it's not just the parents, too. It's also financial advisors. Yeah. Most of the people that I have contact with are financial advisors, and they're not thinking of this in these terms. They're really focused more on adults and adult saving, whereas I'm thinking, you know, a lot of your clients are small business owners, home-based businesses. They're perfect for this sort of thing, and you should probably be talking to them about that. You should go out there and buy my book and give them to your clients.
Right. Absolutely. Give them a leg up. What's the, and just to dip our toe briefly into politics for a second, I'm sure you've had talk with legislators about this. What's anything going on that front, or is that a waste of time?
I think that that is an important front to address, and I have spoken to legislatures, to policymakers, to think tank people, and you get your usual political discussion. Yeah. I mean, if you look at it from one point of view, this is a way for the government to actually fund itself down the road. You know, think about the government allowing people to put money into a taxable IRA now, which is allowable, and then down the road, they're going to get taxes when people take that money out. And that will have grown so that the taxes, the revenues they get, will be a lot greater than what they are today. So it's a way of maybe, you know, planting a forest or a garden and then harvesting it later on. So there's that view of thinking of it. But then there's other people who say, well, all this is going to do is make the rich richer. I can't solve everybody's problems, but if I can solve just a few more people, you know, issues who aren't thinking of this, then I would consider that successful. I mean, my mind is this. I mean, what really motivates me to be so passionate about this? I had a reporter ask me this question, and she apologized for saying, well, I don't mean to, you know, imply that you have this secret motive there. But it made me think, and I told her, look, this is a great question. As a reporter, don't apologize for asking it. It forced me to think, why am I passionate about this? And I remembered, you know, growing up, I grew up in a steel mill town. It essentially went away. The steel company collapsed, went bankrupt, went away. People who were relying on the government to help them didn't have help. People who were relying on their company to help them didn't get the help. People who were relying on their union to help them didn't get the help. These poor people, these are the people that I grew up with. And I was very young when this happened. There was really nothing that I could do to help them. But I really am motivated to help people avoid ever being in that situation. And this won't necessarily help everybody, but it could help a lot of people.
Wow. The website again is childira.com for more about the child IRA. And also, if you'd like Chris to either come speak or you want to look at all of the things he's done in the media, books, all the stuff that Chris has done, it's chriscarosa.com. Chris, thanks for hanging out with us for a few minutes today. I really appreciate it. And good luck with the book launch.
Thanks a lot, Joe.
In just a moment, let's get our roundtable in here to discuss Chris's awesome ideas. But first, if you've ever wondered if there were a way to capitalize on all the online chatter of all those investors on social media, like we've talked about before on the show, your wait's over because you can apply the same artificial intelligence techniques that some of the world's most sophisticated hedge funds use to your portfolio. It's called the Buzz Index. It's licensed to an exchange-traded fund, trades under ticker symbol BUZ, and that will give you portfolio securities that show the highest degree of positive investor sentiment online. They don't survey. They don't guess. Instead, they use proprietary analytics to take the most talked about companies and add them to a portfolio each month that show the most positive sentiment online. No guessing again, no surveys. Head to moneytreepodcast.com/BUZZ for more information. That's moneytreepodcast.com/BUZZ. Happy New Year to the Buzz Index. And let's say Happy New Year also to our contributors. Let's go across the ocean first, where my friend Doug Goldstein from Goldstein on Gelt joins us.
How are you doing there, Joe? Happy New Year to you and your family.
Thank you. You too, sir. I'm better now that I'm back with you. How was your New Year?
It was fantastic. It was, needless to say, beautiful and sunny here because it always is in Israel.
Now, it's the desert in Israel, right?
Well, it used to be the desert for 2,000 years. And then when the state of Israel started in 1948, magically, some would say, or prophetically, it started to bloom. So it's not really a desert anymore. We should be recording here next week, I think, right?
Well, somebody waiting for it to bloom in the desert where she's at in Palm Springs from the Be Wealthy and Smart podcast. It's Linda P. Jones.
Hey, Happy New Year.
Has it started prophetically blooming in Palm Springs?
We got some flowers blooming here. Got the
you know,
purples planted out in the yard. Mm-hmm.
And Happy New Year to you. Did you have a great New Year? So you go to a big party?
We went to Arizona and visited family, and then New Year's we were with friends.
So. Well, that's very nonspecific. I like that.
Oh, it was a quiet party of 10, I would say, a dinner party.
Nice. And Linda, the person who's a party everywhere she goes in the great state of Idaho, it's Miranda Marquit from Planting Money Seeds and Adulting.tv.
Heyo, how's it going?
You are a party wherever you go, aren't you?
Sure.
So you had a good New Year's?
Yeah, it was great. Much like Linda, since I'm on the west side of the country, I watched the ball drop and then went to bed before midnight my time.
Well, glad that we've got the band back together, guys. So let's jump into this. This idea of your child being a millionaire, it just sounds very, well, let's ask you, Linda, the idea of making a child a millionaire, get you pretty excited?
Well, I love the idea of compounding. And for someone to get started super early is very smart. I think every parent should do it, whether it's for their children's retirement or for the children's college or for whatever reason. It's a great idea. I'm just concerned about what is the actual purchasing power going to be of the child at 65, because it sounds like it's quite a bit of money to us today, but actually that long in the future, I wanted to do the calculation of what inflation would do to purchasing power. So that's really what's been on my mind is how much is it really going to be available to purchase at that time?
But you're saying it's a nice start, but it's still maybe not enough.
Exactly.
But isn't that tough? I mean, Doug, to her point, it seems tough that Chris is talking about starting at age zero, and yet it might not be enough money.
Yeah, I have to say, I'm trying to figure out what exactly Linda would be investing in if she's not like buying this whole stock market thing, because people like us usually say
best
long-term investment is in the stock market.
Time out. Where did I say I didn't invest in the stock market?
No, I just thought you were saying it wasn't enough. I mean, what are you going to do?
No, I'm saying what's the purchasing power going to be? So it's $2.5 million, but what is that really going to be able to purchase in the future? Maybe that only purchases $100,000 worth of goods today. In the future, no one will purchase $100,000 worth of goods. That's all I'm saying. I'm not saying anything about the stock market.
I apologize, Linda. Needless to say, as always, is correct. But let's just say for a minute, inflation is 3 or 4%, and he's making 11. What did he say? 8% on his portfolio because he was cutting down 3 from the 11% that he really believes. Then you're still, you know, really doing much ahead of inflation according to his model.
I love this. Our first disagreement of 2018. It warms my heart. Miranda, disagree with both of them, please. What do you think? Creating a millionaire out of your child? Are you seriously trying to make Miranda's child a millionaire by the time he's 18?
Well, it's not going to happen, so it doesn't matter what I'm trying to do. I've only got 3 years here before he's 18. It's just not going to happen.
Well, with all that big money in blogging and in adulting TV, I'm sure it'll happen.
I'm not so much interested in me making him a millionaire as I am interested in teaching him good principles of money management and ways for him to make his own money over time. So, you know, that's what I'm more interested in is giving him the skill set and helping teach him. But he does have, it's interesting that we're talking about IRAs. He does have an IRA and he does have a long-term investment account and he does have a 529. And so, you know, we've been looking at this, well, whatever. Anyway, he's the beneficiary of a 529. Anyway, so he does have these, you know, we've got the custodial IRA going. We've got a separate long-term investment account and a taxable account for him so that he can look at the stuff. So yeah, like he's not going to be a millionaire by the time he's 18. And I don't care if he's a millionaire by the time he's 18. What's important is that he's got a nice start in his financial life. And he is learning things that will hopefully help him manage his own money and grow his own wealth in the future.
one of the things Chris said is if your kid wants an IRA, he's got to actually work, like do modeling. Is that what Gavin does?
Yeah, right. No, so I pay him a very small and reasonable salary for helping me with administrative tasks in my business. And of course, you know, he's almost 16. Well, he'll be 16 next year. Well, this year. Oh, wow. It's 2018. He'll be 16 this year and he'll be able to get his own job. But he does occasionally do odd jobs for other people. And then, like I said, I do pay him a small amount for doing administrative type tasks for my business so that he does have that earned income.
That's a key component here is this idea of earned income. But I like what you're saying also, Miranda, about starting early and learning about this stuff early. I mean, a lot of our frustration on the show is that people have all kinds of questions about just how some of the fundamental things work. And it makes me wonder, Linda, not to get too political, but should this idea Chris has of an IRA for children so they can start early, do some of the basics we talk about, should that rule maybe be changed?
I think we should allow people more options for saving for retirement and creating wealth for themselves. Why should the government hold us back from certain things? Why shouldn't they give us incentive to do more? And I think,
Amen,
you know,
like, sister,
by giving us tax breaks, by giving us special, you know, IRA type vehicles that grow without tax, or giving us Roths that come out without tax. Those are great incentives, but we have limits to the dollar amounts, to how much we can put in there. And those limits are restricting us from really possibly becoming as independent as we could for saving for retirement on our own, because, you know, again, there are limitations to what we can put in. But I just also want to be really clear that, you know, compounding is the most powerful thing in the financial world. And the fact that we're starting at such a young age is the most brilliant thing someone can do, whether it's for yourself or for your children. So I'm all about compounding. You know, I think Doug was misunderstanding what I was saying about the stock market somehow, but no, I want to be clear on record that compounding is the best thing to do for wealth. And it's the best thing we can do for our kids. And if we can do more of it, and more of it sheltered from tax, then we're all going to be better off, because then, you know, we can actually do things for ourselves. And I think that would be a great benefit.
Oh, Doug's just being Doug, Linda. How long have you worked with this guy?
Come on. Okay, I need to officially and on record apologize to Linda. I was just cutting you off too soon, and I should have listened, and I didn't listen well enough. And
no, it's
everything
okay.
You say
my point was just about purchasing power. You know, my point is just, what is it really going to be able to buy in the future?
But I love that point, Linda, because of the fact that what you're saying is this is a fantastic start. It's better than most people do. The law kind of is against us, right? And yet you're saying it still might not be enough, which means no matter what age you are, we need to save more money.
Well, no, remember, he put in, you know, a certain amount and then he stopped, which was great.
$1,000. Oh, right.
$1,000. Yes, right. 18 years.
Right.
Yeah, to his point, that was, you know, a great example, and it looks great with compounding simply because you have the time of compounding on your side. That's extremely powerful. But think about how that would have been so much stronger if he had kept up even $1,000 a year. It didn't even have to be an increased amount. Even if he just, you know, kept up a small annual investment every year, that would appreciate, because he started so early, it would still appreciate to a phenomenal amount. So that's my point. It's just, he stopped it, but what if we kept going?
Yeah. And I think about, back to the legislation, Doug, I think about, you know, some of the handcuffs that we have in the United States anyway, where we now got to do things like backdoor Roth IRAs, right? To work around the current laws. It seems like widening that would certainly encourage people to save a lot more money.
Yeah, listen, I think that's true. I also think that simply if they're not going to do that, because it seems for some reason, I don't understand why there are these low artificial ceilings on how much you can put into retirement plans. Certainly lowering the tax burden on long-term capital gains helps everyone, to encourage them to invest and then benefit from exactly what Linda's saying, which is compound growth on your investment, just without having to pay it off to the government every step of the way, every year. I just think, Joe, I want to touch on something, because you have kids now who are, you know, finishing college age. I'm not sure if Chris was just using this as an example to teach compound interest, or if he's really saying that you actually should try, the goal, your goal should be to make millionaires out of your kids. Is that what you're trying to do for your kids? Because you really probably could do it today if you wanted to.
Yeah, I don't think that's what I'm trying to do at all. I thought it was more of an example.
Okay.
How about you?
Yeah, I guess so. But I just think people all of a sudden get this feeling, oh, wow, they're talking about making my kids so rich. I don't know. I think that all that does when you give kids too much money is enables them to not work, not save, and not invest.
Well, and I think clearly, you know, when it comes, Miranda, to between your goal and your child's goal, you should probably, like when we talk about college versus retirement, save for your own retirement first. Do you agree with that?
Oh, yeah, for sure. I didn't start putting money into my son's 529 until I had got to the point where I was on track to max out my Roth IRA contributions each year. So I wanted to make sure that, you know, that I was taking care of my retirement and making sure that was covered before I started diverting some of my resources toward the 529. As a result, like, you know, I didn't start a 529 for him until I think he was probably 6 or 7 years old. But, you know, I mean, it's got a decent amount in it now. I mean, it's probably enough to pay for, it depends on where he goes to school, I guess. But depending on where he goes to school, I mean, it's almost enough to pay for 4 years of undergrad at a state college. So it's just something that you definitely do want to make sure you're taking care of yourself first. Because, you know, it's that old thing, right? That old adage that they use from the airplane and that we use all the time in personal finances. You know, you can't help somebody else if you've like passed out. So that's why they tell you to put the mask on yourself first before you put it on your kids.
If I pass out doing my budget's way off track. By the way. Right.
But I love what Miranda said about how she pays her son the salary to help in her business. And I think with the internet, we have so much more opportunity to earn income and to do things that don't require a traditional, quote, job that, you know, we hear all these stories about how the young kids are so good with technology, and they are, right? Because they grew up on it versus us who had to learn it later in life and convert to computers. And so young people can do all kinds of things and start their own business. I think, you know, even if they were converting their neighbor's, you know, holiday card list, mailing list online to make it easier for them and, you know, create a database for them to mail out their cards without, you know, without, that kind of thing, create labels for them or something. I mean, they could do something really simple but useful for anybody in the neighborhood, you know? So I think
right. It's
today, I think the model idea was actually a good idea and something I hadn't really thought much about. But I think this computer, their computer habits that kids have, whether they're doing social media for businesses, whether they're doing interesting tasks around the house for people, I think there's all kinds of things that young people could do if they really were industrious.
Well, let's talk about being industrious a little bit. I want to pivot just a slight bit because this is our first live taping of 2018. And, you know, we talk about starting early, and a lot of guests of the show even talk about starting early. So let's talk about what are some ways to get started early on your goals. Somebody's trying to kick off 2018 on the right foot, Doug Goldstein. What do you think that they do first?
I think the number one thing to do is to just take a brief peek back at what happened last year and see if they were able to meet their savings goals. And if not, now's the time to make up for it. Because following along with the theme of today of compound interest, if you don't save the money, it doesn't matter what kind of investments you have, it just won't help. So check back. If you didn't actually put enough money into your savings, go ahead right now and stuff that money away for the long term.
Linda, what would you add?
I think finding a way to build it in as a regular automated investment is important. You know, David Bach talked about the automatic millionaire, and that was just a simple automation of paying bills or the way you save. And I mean, he automated everything, including bills. But what I'm saying is like dollar cost averaging and just automating your investment account, I think is a super smart idea. It takes out the emotion from investing, and it means that you have a regular contribution into your investments. And I think that's one of the best things people can do.
Miranda?
Ditto. I really think one of the best things you can do as you're starting out the year is to take stock of your values and your priorities and figure out what really matters to you in your life and what you want to accomplish with your money. Because in the end, you know, your money's a tool. And a lot of the time we find ourselves kind of sliding into the situation where we're spending money on things that don't really matter to us, or we're spending it in ways that don't align with our values. So I think a really good start for the year is reflecting on your values, figuring out what's important to you, and then, you know, adjusting your spending, adjusting your saving, adjusting everything to work to that point. you know, you're not going to get there immediately. It's not like you can wake up tomorrow and be like, all right, well, since I want to get rid of all my debt and start my retirement account, I'm going to do it all right now. You can't. But clarifying those values and those priorities can help you start making different decisions and say, hey, wait a minute, is this spending going to help me reach this goal? Or is where I'm putting my money in line with what my core values are? So really kind of start the year with that, I think, or, you know, any time of the year, anytime you start feeling run down about the situation, take stock of, you know, well, why am I unhappy with my financial situation? Is it in part due because what I'm doing with my money doesn't reflect my values?
That's why I also like starting, and I love that point. I love starting with covering my bases and making sure that when things go poorly, that I have a strategy to get out of that. Because I think a lot of times people are very aspirational with their money. And so they'll make some really risky moves, right? And then when something bad comes along, it ends up really derailing the train. And then they lose momentum. And I think that if you start off with the boring stuff, right, the making sure that your risk management strategy is in place, whether that involves insurance or not, and you've got a good emergency fund, I think ends up being the maybe not very exciting place to start, but a good spot. And Linda, to your point, I really like using apps to help people. It seems like automating your money's so much easier now than it ever has been. But really, I guess as I think about that statement as it comes out of my mouth, I think it really wasn't even hard before.
I just want to say the idea of using apps, Joe, I'd actually learned a lot from you on that. You and I spoke about it a couple of months ago on the Goldstein on Gelt show. You had just had so many different ideas for how to do it. I had no idea there were so many tools that were available. You're like the app man.
The app guy. Right.
Well, I think some people are adopters of technology and some people are not adopters of technology. I think that as technology goes on, more and more people are just going to assimilate and make it a part of their life. And there are so many great ideas of ways to save and, you know, round up or automatically invest, that kind of thing. But there's always been, as long as I've been in the investment industry, the dollar cost averaging method, which actually is just one of the easiest and best things that you can do. And that's simply to take it from your savings account. Once your paycheck is deposited into your savings account, just automatically have it drafted out of your savings account into your investment account. And that simple thing, however you do that, whether it's by an app or however you do that, that is a very, very good thing to do.
Yeah, I think the one thing to do, Linda, is don't trust yourself to write a check every month because that will never happen.
That's right. And why make it one more step to do, one thing to forget or one thing to get distracted from? Why not just have it be automated? You know, it's like paying ourselves first. It's something that in the industry, it's been a long belief system that you pay yourself first, but how many people really do it? And this is one way to actually pay yourself first is to have dollar cost averaging and have that money come right out of your savings account into your investment account. And if people just did that one thing, whether they started at zero or whether they started at 18 or whether they started at 21 or 30 or even later, they probably would be better off than someone who didn't do that. I mean, in many cases. So I just think it's a really smart habit to have or an automated system set up.
I think pay yourself first is great time-tested advice for us to put a lid on today's show. Let's talk about what's going on where all of you live. Miranda, how about you? What's happening at adulting.tv and planting money seeds here in the new year?
Yeah. So over at Planting Money Seeds, I have a post on how to, you know, the steps you take to create a financial plan for the new year. And really you can use it any time of the year. You don't just have to do it over the new year, but you know, it's a way for you to kind of take the step-by-step approach to creating your financial plan. And then over at adulting.tv, you know, we've actually started something a little bit more fun and exciting, and we'll be doing it every Wednesday at 12:30 p.m. Eastern. I'll be doing a Facebook Live answering some of our listener questions, just, you know, talking about different subjects that can hopefully help people manage their money and their lives a little bit better.
Excellent. And Linda, how about at Be Wealthy and Smart?
Well, since this is our first recording in the new year, I'm going to recommend that people listen to my 10 financial moves to make in 2018. They're 20 simple things to think about, review, look at, and consider doing to make a financial difference.
Which is wild, Linda, because I think that Doug has 21 things you need to learn at Goldstein on Gelt.
And don't you want to know which one that is? Actually, I had a great interview recently with, interestingly, a competitor of mine another guy. He runs a company that helps people overseas who invest in the United States. And it was a really good interview because it was fun to speak to people who do the same thing. You can see that at goldsteinongelt.com. Just click on radio show and you'll see how cross-border investors can manage their money better. And Joe, this is a particularly important episode for you because if you're planning to expatriate, you might want to listen to that. But if you're planning to stay in America, tell us what's going on at Stacking Benjamins.
Right. Well, either way, regardless of what I'm doing,
you are.
To start off the year, we kick off 2018 with a new year and a new budget. Mitchell Walker has a very simple budget called the Pouch Plan, which, a lot of people struggle with spreadsheets, so why make it complicated? He used to work for this guy named something, I think it's Warren Buffet, Warren Buff, something or other. I don't know.
Never heard.
But some guy, some crazy guy in Omaha. He used to work for that guy, and now he's talking about budgets. So we've got him, and then Wednesday of the first week of the year, we talk to our good friend Nick Clements from Magnify Money about getting out of debt. So if you're somebody that made mistakes the last quarter of last year, we're going to help you get your budget in order and get your debt cleaned up. So that's at Stacking Benjamins. Thanks again to Chris for coming by. We'll have links to everything that Chris has done and about setting up your child IRA at moneytreepodcast.com. And that's going to do it. Miranda, for the first time in 2018, take us out of here.
Thank you so much for listening to this week's episode of the Money Tree Investing Podcast. Be sure to subscribe using Apple Podcasts, using Google Play, or using Stitcher. And every single week, we will deliver a fresh new episode to your device of choice. And don't forget to check out moneytreepodcast.com for show notes, more information on our guests, and of course, to find out more about your panelists and get access to other resources and some of the projects that we are working on. And until next time, remember, no one will take care of your money as well as you do. So invest in your life.
Thank you for listening to the Money Tree Investing Podcast. Visit us at moneytreepodcast.com for more free investing resources.